In the 1940s, penicillin was so hard to get that scientists studied how to recycle it from patients' pee. It demonstrates how the human body does a poor job of metabolizing the antibiotics and other pharmaceuticals we ingest. It depends on the drug, but roughly speaking, 25 to 75% of the antibiotics we consume are excreted, mostly as urine due to the drug's solubility, but the average rate is 70%. So, considering the thousands of tons of antibiotics we all consume each year, it makes me wonder, what are all those antibiotics in our wastewater doing, and what can we do about it? From 2000 to 2015, world human antibiotic consumption has increased by 65%, and that growth is likely to continue, hitting maybe a 200% increase by 2030. High and upper middle income countries consume the most antibiotics. In 2016, there were 270.2 million antibiotic prescriptions issued to Americans across the country. Side note, you have at the other end of this, the situation in areas like sub-Saharan Africa, where treatable infectious diseases like pneumonia are one of the leading causes of death for children under the age of 5. Same planet, two worlds. 50 to 70% of these prescriptions are for what we call beta-lactam antibiotics, a class of drug that includes the penicillin family and amoxicillin, a name that I heard plenty of during my own childhood. It was estimated in 2010-2011 that 30% of antibiotic prescriptions issued to outpatients, meaning patients who do not stay overnight at a hospital or clinic, were unnecessary. To give credit to the United States, extensive education and interventions have reduced this unnecessary antibiotic consumption in a meaningful way. The 2016 number of 273 million prescriptions sounds formidable, but that is actually a 5% decline in the prescription rate from 2011, from 877 per 1,000 people to 836. And just in case you think the United States is uniquely wasteful, a study of 18.8 million antibiotics prescriptions in the People's Republic of China between 2014 to 2018 found that 51.4% were inappropriate. And then we have the largely unmeasured trend of antibiotic consumption by farmed animals on land or in water. Roughly half of the world antibiotics production is used for animals, not humans. And I say roughly because nobody really knows, especially outside of the United States. Farmers who give antibiotics to their animals for non-treatment reasons often do so as a preventive measure or to improve nutrient uptake, which helps save on feed costs. I'm going to choose my words carefully here because this stuff is controversial. It can be demonstrated that antibiotics use in farmed animals, fish, beef, shrimp, turkey, chicken, pork, so on, promotes pockets of resistant bacteria. And those pockets can infect individual humans. But whether those pockets pose a major transmission risk or is responsible for the current human plague of antibiotic-resistant bacteria is less easily proven. Generally, most resistant bacteria infecting humans come from other humans. A 2008 survey by the U.S. Department of Agriculture found that 88% of growing pigs in the United States received antibiotics in their feed. Regardless of what you might think, we probably shouldn't be feeding so much of this to our animals. Since then, consumer and regulatory attention have caused pig farmers to change their animal rearing and feeding practices. A 2017 survey found a 43% decline in antibiotic sales for animals since the 2015 peak year. However, it is unlikely that antibiotic usage for commercially raised animals will ever go down to zero, even with the use of vaccines, strict cleaning, and biosecurity practices. We will still need them to cure serious disease outbreaks, for instance. And I should also note, again, that antibiotic feedstock is widely used outside of the United States, too. In 2013, 52% of China's 163,000 tons of antibiotic consumption was by animals rather than humans. A particular concern is the wastewater coming from the healthcare centers, like hospitals. Hospitals consume a lot of water, around 660 to 1,500 liters a day per person, and a 2001 estimate found that a quarter of all antibiotics administered take place inside the hospital. And of course, there are a lot of sick people there. This means significant amounts of hospital wastewater, and this is not your ordinary wastewater. Hospital wastewater not only contains up to 150 times as many antibiotics as regular municipal water, but also high concentrations of antibiotic-resistant bacteria and genes. The bacteria by themselves are worrisome enough. Many of these hospital bugs are pathological. But we should also worry about the genes because bacteria can pick up these genes via horizontal gene transfer and then become resistant to certain antibiotics. It is the primary mechanism for resistance to spread. In addition, hospital wastewater is often dumped into the local water system without additional treatment. One assessment of 23 antibiotics from 2017 found that hospitals are responsible for 40% of all the drugs entering the wastewater treatment systems. However, I should add that local load depends on the hospital's size, the sewage system, the country, and so on. All this consumption turns the wastewater treatment plants into hotspots for cultivating antibiotic-resistant bacteria. We have been treating domestic as a non-industrial wastewater the same way for, like, 100 years. It is generally a three-stage process. I covered this in a previous video about Singapore's new water, so feel free to watch that as well. In the first stage, we use various mechanical filters, like sand filters, to sift out all the solid things inside the wastewater. You can imagine what those might be. Chemicals might also be added to break up those solids as well. After that, a second stage works to eliminate organic matter, nitrogen, and other biodegradable items from the water. Most commonly used is a biological process called the activated sludge process. Here, we inject oxygen into a tank full of wastewater. This promotes microorganism growth. While there will be toxic stuff in the water like detergents, the sheer amount of organic matter helps those microorganisms digest it. After the process, we are left with two end products. First, a sludge that we can recycle into the next batch of wastewater. And second, we get a relatively clean water that we can then treat in the third and final finishing step using methods such as UV radiation and chlorination. The worry is that these wastewater treatment plants are breeding grounds for superbugs. The first antibiotics were naturally made by fungi or other bacteria, meaning that they were quite biodegradable. That is no longer the case. Today's drugs are synthetic chemicals that do not easily break down. Chemists, in fact, engineer these drugs to remain stable for longer because it makes them more effective inside the body. But that also means that they stay stable throughout the wastewater treatment process. At the same time, basically every gene encoding for every known natural mechanism of antibiotic resistance is floating around in this water. It's like leaving big cargo crates of weapons on the video game map for anyone to pick up. So, we're mixing together high concentrations of antibiotics, antibiotic-resistant bacteria, and mobile antibiotic-resistant genes, along with a bunch of other stuff like heavy metals, detergents, hydrocarbons, and such, in a nice, warm, wet environment. We don't know exactly what happens in there. The presumption is that the antibiotic residues help select for more resistant bacteria by wiping out vulnerable bacteria, disrupting competition from the local ecosystem, and letting the resistant bugs reproduce. But we can study the wastewater going in and out of these treatment plants for the presence of antibiotic resistance in certain bacteria. And around the world, multiple studies find that there is a significantly higher prevalence of antibiotic-resistant bacteria to one or more drugs in water leaving the plant as opposed to the water coming in. In one case, strains of two bacteria showed increased resistance to 21 out of 22 tested antibiotics after going through wastewater treatment. These plants are literal superbug breeding stations. After the treated water with its bugs in it exits the treatment plant, there are plenty of ways that this water can make its way back to us. For example, the activated sludge left over from the second stage biological process is sometimes used as agricultural fertilizer. This varies by country, however, and I know in Europe they cannot do this and so incinerate it. And then there is the treated water itself. Except in certain cases, like Singapore, the water goes to non-potable things like irrigation, groundwater recharge, or constructed wetlands. What's that last one? Artificial wetlands for treating water. I guess it's kind of like another way to let nature take its course. Wetlands are fairly good at removing antibiotics and antibiotic-resistant genes from treated water, around 40 to 80% reduction, particularly if they have artificial aeration. But it works best with wastewater with lower levels of organic matter, so your mileage may vary. You might presume that keeping the water away from our drinking fountains automatically makes it safe, but even non-potable usages can come back to haunt us. For example, irrigating plants that we eventually eat with water contaminated with antibiotics and antibiotic-resistant bacteria, that sounds like an issue. Part of the challenge with treating and removing these drugs from the water is figuring out what is actually in the water and in what concentration. 6 classes of antibiotics have been detected in our wastewater, with large disparities in those 6 even between neighboring regions. In one study, a sample taken from Hong Kong found less than 15 nanograms of the antibiotic cefotaxime in 1 liter of wastewater, but in neighboring Shenzhen, we had 1,100 nanograms per liter. For different antibiotic cefalexin, the situation was reversed. These varying concentrations are dependent on multiple factors like the size of the watershed or even the seasons, because they affect what ailments affect patients and thus the drugs they get prescribed. Another tricky part of the problem is that we're not entirely sure what is the quote-unquote correct amount of antibiotics to have in the water. Not having a number to shoot for makes this all harder. And different antibiotics respond to different removal methods, per their particular physical properties. One simpler way to remove antibiotics is to retain the sludge longer at the second step, maybe even in a membrane bioreactor. The longer we retain the sludge, the more likely we can get a microbial environment capable of breaking down the water's antibiotics. Even so, removal via biological processes is highly variable and probably not reliable. There are others. We can try to filter out the antibiotics using membranes. This is where we just push the water through nano-sized pores, and the chemicals then get caught in those pores. Quite similar to the concept of reverse osmosis, which we use for purifying salty water. And I think that similarity can help with adoption, though we should consider cost and problems with the water fouling the filters. But filtering works pretty well, and they found removal rates of 90% for antibiotics like quinolones, sulfonamides, and tetracyclines. Another study found that filters removed over 98.5% of amoxicillin from wastewater. Another method is adsorption. This is where we place a material, activated carbon, bentonite, or maybe even carbon nanotubes, into the wastewater. And there, it accumulates the antibiotic chemical on its surface, thereby removing it from the water. Such adsorption methods are frequently used for removing organic contaminants, and it can be repurposed for removing antibiotics. Finally, I want to call out ozonation. We already do this for drinking water. Ozone is an unstable molecule of 3 oxygen atoms. When we run microbubbles of ozone through water, it oxidizes various chemicals, creating insoluble particles that we can remove with filters. Applying ozonation in various doses and for various lengths can remove significant amounts of antibiotics. For example, one study found that applying 7.1 micrograms of ozone per liter of water for a little over a minute can remove over 95% of some antibiotics. But for others, more ozone or exposure time will be required. Other options show promise too. UV light treatment works, though it is expensive, and parasitic acid disinfection has been gaining attention in recent years as a more environmentally friendly alternative to chlorine. Many of these cleaning applications are best applied downstream of traditional second-stage biological processes. Yes, they are likely to be expensive, but increasingly likely to be useful as more chemicals enter our water systems. The years between the 1930s and 1960s were the glory days of antibiotics. There were literal magic bullets that saved many lives, but we have since stopped discovering as many of them, and that has given the bacteria a chance to catch up. The American CDC estimates that each year, antibiotic-resistant bacteria cause over 2.8 million infections and over 35,000 deaths. This is happening right now, and we need to do something about it. It is proven that part of the issue is letting the drugs left behind in our wastewater grow the next generation of superbugs. We need to stop it. All right, everyone, that's it for tonight. Thanks for watching. Subscribe to the channel, sign up for the newsletter, and I'll see you guys next time.